Well, hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle with my friend and colleague Alfonso Rachel, and this is the Virtue Signal, where we try to examine some of the politics and morality underneath the events of the day. And Zoe, this is our very special Halloween in spring edition of the Virtue Signal.
All right.
And I thought, this is a really simple question. Mm. What scares you?
What frightens me? There's a passage in the Word of God says, get away from me, I don't know you. The thing that frightens me the most ever is to not have the Lord know me.
That's a solid answer. Mm. So you can connect, you can certainly connect to this unbelievable social pressure in the Middle Ages in Europe of that came from the idea of excommunication. I mean, the idea that before the Protestant Reformation, mm. the only way that you could get into heaven or talk to God was through the priesthood, and excommunication meant they could snip the line between you and God, and you're out of luck. Mm. That can you elaborate on that? That's a really profound thing. It's kind of lonely, isn't it? And I don't want to put words in your mouth.
That's a good question, man. I'm glad you asked, because that's what religion does. The Lord doesn't do that. Nobody has the authority to excommunicate us. That's the Lord's decision. We don't go to a priest to redeem us. We don't go to a priest to get permission to talk to God or any sort of counsel like that. The Lord himself is our high priest. He went to the cross to have that distinction. He gave his blood for that. So there is no other priest that can tell me that I'm excommunicated or anything like that, that tells you that you can't be at church or anything like that. Church isn't—
I'd like to just take a quick moment to thank all of the Catholics who had supported us in the past and who have now hit the unsubscribe button and are demanding their money back, but please continue.
I know. Yeah, I have this stigma of not being a big fan of religion as it is.
You mentioned that.
But hopefully they'll hear us out, right? And I have lost some friends over this.
Separation from God, though, that's something that everybody who's a religious person or a spiritual person can connect to.
Sure.
That separation from the divine.
Indeed, man. Because the thing is when we try to define goodness on our own terms, and the Lord even says, it's like, look, you're gonna be calling out to me, talking about Lord, Lord, and we prayed and all this sort of stuff. And Jesus said, look, man, depart from me, you doers of lawlessness. I don't know you. And he says, I don't know where you come from. Now, that's a scary thing to me, Bill, because he knows everything, which means that if he decides that he doesn't know, it's because he doesn't want to. Because a person has assumed that they're gonna define goodness and all these things on their own terms, and it leads to a lot of problems. So Jesus is like, look, you can't be bringing that into my kingdom, because it won't be heaven anymore. You're going to make it suck for everybody. So, you know, with the Lord, if he decides that, you know, I don't know you, it would be because I'm a good person. You know, I'm good. And I can go ahead and define goodness on my own person. I could stack up merits for myself, and I can get away with whatever I want to get away with. But I could say, hey, you only look at the bad things I do. Look at the good stuff that I do. So, you know, these are the kinds of people that, you know, the Lord is like, look, man, I really don't want to party with you. So you're gonna make things suck for everybody else. So that for me would be a very scary thing.
Let me tell you what scares me the most. Well, carnies, obviously.
Smell like cabbage.
No, seriously, what really scares me the most is ignorance, which I kind of define as arrogance plus certainty. Mm. I'm not talking about the kind of ignorance where you don't know something about something. I'm talking about the kind of certainty in what you believe and the arrogance that is required in order for you to be so certain about what you believe that you are determined that everybody else is wrong. And furthermore, you should shut them up. This scares the living daylights out of me. I've said many times, and it's a source of constant amazement to me, that when I was much younger, I passionately believed in things that I didn't know anything about. Mm. I look back on the things that I was so and it's like you hadn't got the faintest idea. Reagan's gonna get us all killed. He's actually gonna keep us all alive. But there was there came a point, not only when I changed my like political views and stuff, but there came a point when I began to realize, you know, that it's the certainty. I'm not talking about spiritual certainty. I'm talking about this intellectual certainty that you can't possibly be wrong. Mm-hmm. And whenever I look at the great evils in the world, the communists and the Nazis and the woke crowd, mm-hmm. what I see is that kind of ignorance. It's certainty plus arrogance. It's the inability to even have the shadow of the idea that you could be wrong. I worry about being wrong all the time. That's why I'm never wrong, but and I'm damn sure of it too. But no, but seriously, I worry about it all the time. If I see a story or I make a point, it turns out that wasn't true or didn't happen. It makes me almost sick, and I'm constantly checking, pre-flighting the things that I believe in, and I'm constantly asking myself, well, what if they're right, you know? Mm. Well, I mean, really, seriously, what if the progressives are right? What if is it going to be a better world? Because if I really thought it was going to be a better world, safer, happier world, then I'd change my position again. But I don't see that. But I'm willing to have the conversation, but many people aren't. And when you break this one down in terms of conservatives and progressives, this one's not even close. I'm not saying there aren't conservatives who don't want to listen and aren't going to ever change their minds. We've all had emails from people who are more conservative than thou. But looking out there into society, I think maybe it's because conservatives we're just swimming a sea of these progressive ideas, and we constantly have to deal with them and are exposed to them. But more and more and more, every day, the armies of the ignorant, you know, the students who are so sure of themselves and so ready to fight for things that they know nothing about, that scares the living daylights out of me.
I hear you, man. And I've been like you, man. I've been on that side, and I can sympathize with these guys. And man, and I look at myself, it's like, man, it's almost kind of like embarrassing. I used to believe that stuff. And, you know, look, and even today, and now I have to say, because, you know, they'll say about this, well, you guys can never admit that you're wrong. It's like, yes, we can. I used to be a Democrat. I had to come to the grips.
Yeah, my blog was eject, eject, eject. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I've got an ideology that is burning and on fire, and I'm getting out.
That's right, man. It's like, that was me admitting that I am wrong. So, but with that, I have to know that when I do my checks, you know, what am I basing it on? I have to come to the logical conclusion that I am made of finite material. I'm a finite individual. So my ideas themselves are also going to decay just like things do in the natural. So I have to square, following that logic, I have to base what I believe on something that is not finite, something that is infinite, something that has been here long before me and something that will be here long after I'm gone. So I don't assume that I have what it takes to build an idea that I can just stick to and that's going to be my religion or my philosophy or anything like that. You know, but the things that people they're going by today, when we look at these people who are so arrogant and so woke and stuff like that, and these people are looking for the validation of the state to make it an institution of the things that we have to live by. Things like that already lets me know that these people are wrong, right? Whether they're going to do it by stealing the votes, whether they do it by judicial activism or something like that, judicial fiat. They want people to live. They want to force people to live by their worldview. And true liberty doesn't work that way. The Lord himself, he doesn't work that way. And that's the thing that I subscribe to. That's the thing that, you know, when I base what I feel is going to be good. And really, let me say this. It's not about making other people live by, you got to live by Jesus, right? It's not that way. What people are misunderstanding is like, look, I am not going to let you force me to live by your sins. You go ahead and you do you, right? Go ahead and do you. Mm-hmm. But in the Ten Commandments, Bill, when it says that you shall have no other gods before you, when it's talking about that, the term gods is not specific, not strictly in a deistic sense. It's talking about authority, right? Mm-hmm. The state as a god itself, the king or whichever. These people are also seen as gods. God says—
There should be nothing more important than me.
Exactly. And do not, and when the full breakdown is, do not let anyone make you, right? We're being made to submit to these people, right? And the fact that they are making us submit is already letting me know, like when you ask, is it possible that these people may be right? I could, let me, if I may, Bill, let me say to you, surely, no, they're not right. They're not right at all.
I'm relatively convinced of this. Mm. If I sometimes think about if 60-year-old Bill had gone back in time and talked to 20-year-old Bill and told him all the things that he believed in and why he was going to change his mind, I don't think 20-year-old Bill would have listened to 60-year-old Bill. Mm. However, if you take that 40 years in the other direction and 100-year-old Bill comes back in time and talks to me, the first thing I'd say to 100-year-old Bill is, man, you are buff. Why are you sweating so much? And 100-year-old Bill say, I just ran a triple marathon just for fun, just for kicks. Anyway, but I would listen now. Mm. And a lot of times there's a saying, I'm probably mangling it a little bit, but something to the effect of your opinion is the point at which you stop thinking. And I'm constantly trying to find or at least maintain the mental suppleness to understand that if I could have been so 100% sure of those things before and been wrong then there is at least a theoretical chance that I'm wrong now. And one of the great experiences in life is one of the most kind of uncomfortable ones, and that is getting into an argument with somebody and then over time realizing, you know, these people, that guy's got a great point. You know, he has a great point. I had not seen that at all. And I have to rethink my attitude on this. That was a perspective I never expected. It was just beyond my radar. And it's not so much that I was wrong so much as there was, because like I said, I'm just not wrong. But it was more like, okay. And even though to some degree, you know, when you're in a serious argument, because I do a lot of speaking events and some rarely we get somebody wants to really get into it with me, and that's fine. But when you find out that they bring a perspective that you didn't have before, and it usually works both ways, there's this moment when you realize, okay, well, my blood was up, you know, and I had to win this argument come, you know, hell or high water, but this guy makes a really good point. Then when you leave, you are a bigger person. Mm. I can't really describe it. The only thing I can get to that's even close to it was back in seventh grade, there was this kid who really hated me. But he did. Mm. And he was two lockers down, a Cuban kid. And I just got into school in Florida from Bermuda. And I thought this kid's definitely going to make an attempt to kill me. So one morning we find ourselves out in phys ed and we're playing, picking up basketball teams, and we're playing like 3-on-3. And this kid took the ball, the basketball, and just threw it into my nose as hard as he could. And before I knew what happened, I hit him in the mouth. Mm. And that's the only fight I ever got into. Mm. But here's the point. I thought to myself, okay, now when between sixth and seventh period or whatever, when we're both at the same lockers at the same time, he's gonna knife me. And sure enough, that same day I get there and I'm working on my locker and I look down, he's over there, and he looks over at me and he says, hey, how's it going? And I said, oh, I'm good. How are you? All right, good. You know, it's like, I don't know how to explain that dynamic of sometimes you have to get hit in the nose to respect somebody else's opinion. But I've had many experiences like that on an intellectual level, not on a physical level, because I just come heavily armed. Anybody makes a move on me, they're going down. But you know what I'm saying? There's a kind of a post-fight respect for somebody who's done something to change your mind. And there's not enough of that in the world today.
Well, I want to ask, Like you had mentioned going back to seeing your 20-year-old self, what would you tell, how would you try to convince your 20-year-old self, man, without socking yourself in the nose? How would you try to reason with your 20-year-old self to try to see things?
Well, I would I would say, so, Bill, you love your country, right? Because I did. I said, yes. I said, well, you will again, and you will the whole time. You'll never stop loving your country. You'll never stop wanting to fight the bad guys. You're never gonna change your attitude that there's something fundamentally good about business. I was a real pro-business guy when I was in college. But I will say that there are – that sometimes things function in a way that they don't appear. If I would – just as a specific example, the reason you're so afraid that Ronald Reagan's going to get us all killed in a nuclear war is because you're convinced that the Soviets are just like you. And because they're just like you, they don't want to be threatened. And what they really want is they want a handshake and they want reassurances and they want to – and they want all the things, you know, they want to give up nuclear weapons. All, that's – you're assuming that they are thinking like you, but they're not thinking like you. The people running that government have murdered 100 million of their own people, shot them in the basement, in the back of the neck. And you and your society did not grow up that way. They are not like what you think. And if you do a little research into this, you'll not only know that's true, you will eventually come to the conclusion that how could they possibly be? The worst thing that Eisenhower ever did that I'm aware of was he got angry enough to throw a golf club in the general direction of one of his friends, because he had a pretty hot temper. On the other side of the aisle, the worst thing that Stalin ever did was sign, I think it was 17,000 death warrants in one afternoon, you know, and I don't see those two things as being equal. And I don't think that a government that's run by a guy who in the absolute darkest moment tosses a golf club is the same kind of country as one that takes 30, 40 million of its own people out at 4 o'clock in the morning and shoots them in the back of the head and buries them in unmarked graves. Mm. So that's what I would tell you about this. You've got to deal with them in an entirely different way. That's how I would have explained it.
Now, would you say, though, you would have the luxury of basically talking to your 20-year-old self as a person who appreciated reason?
Yeah, for sure. No, that would have, I would have, I really think I would have changed my own mind.
Okay.
I really do. Because I can be a charming son of a gun when the mood calls. But seriously, I think all I'm really saying is that if 60-year-old Bill could have gone back and talked to 20-year-old Bill, I would have been able to explain to him the pathway. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I would have been able to compress the pathway that got me from here to over here. Here's how you change thinking about these things. And I still kind of wonder if I'm going to wake up and see 100-year-old Bill saying, Bill, no. Woke is awesome. And socialized healthcare is fantastic. It's unbelievable. You won't believe how happy people are. And you are going to be so embarrassed that you fought for things like freedom and liberty and, you know, all that. That would take some convincing. But I'm at least open to the possibility. I'll listen. You're going to have to put some evidence down for a claim like that. But yeah, I'll listen to anything.
That's a scary thought, man. Like a 100-year-old Bill with a BLM shirt and all that sort of stuff. Man, I don't know. But now, because, you know, Bill, we get asked, man, how are we going to reach, you know, these tweets?
I'm down with the movement.
Right?
I have a hoodie too, and I'll be laying down some fat beats.
And I've heard them beats, man. They are fat. obese even.
Oh, God, please don't let me live that long. I don't want to live that long. Yeah, obese. I'm going to lay down some obese beats for you.
Obese beats. That's catchy, Bill. I like that.
It's not bad. Right?
But we get asked, man, how are we going to reach these 20-year-olds and these this woke crowd? What is the path to connecting with them? Like I said, you have the luxury. You can reflect on your past and consider yourself as a person who appreciates reason. It's like, okay, we can reason this out, and you follow it to this conclusion. You're a pretty bright guy. You know how this is going to play out. But a lot of folks, they're not, you know, I don't want to say that they're just naturally that way, but a lot of folks are conditioned to not be able to communicate like that, where you can't just reason with them. There has to be another angle.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of people I could reach with reason, but more and more every day, if you asked me what I would use in order to deal with them, I think my answer would be I'd use one of those long poles that the guys in animal control have that have a little noose on the end, you know, and you put it around the neck of this feral dog and you get to keep it, you know, at a 10-foot distance and just kind of, you know, okay.
Shock prod.
Calm down. Yeah. And then,
right?
Tranquilizer dart in the neck. And then we'll set them free and see how they like being able to.
Hey, we know how people like being shocked. It sounds like, you know, the shock rod will be in play. I don't know if that's the way that we really, not really use that kind of shock therapy, but I guess, you know.
Cattle prods have a persuasive factor all their own. Well, that'll do it for this edition of The Virtue Signal. It's made possible by the members at BillWhittle.com. And if you'd like to join us, you can just go right there to BillWhittle.com. You can become a member, make a one-time donation if you'd like. We really enjoy talking about these things, and it's always just good among friends to have these kind of conversations. But it's also good to know that there are people of goodwill out there who may disagree on certain things or come from different backgrounds, and it's not the end of the world despite what they want it you to believe. So for my friend Alfonso Rachel, I'm Bill Whittle. We'll see you next time right here on The Virtue Signal.